start your day the Torah way, Northwest London, Thursday, 19th of 7, 8th of June. Rabbi Elchanan Goldblatt Shlita, Parsha theme. This week's Torah way has been sponsored anonymously.
Bishus. What I want to do first is to go through an Or HaChaim at the beginning of the parasha, and then I'll talk a little further about the Sicha, which our Rosh Hashiva Reb Chaim Shulevitz used to give. The background is like this. As everybody knows, the last perek in Parshas Noso is the Chanukas HaNasiim, the gifts that the Nasiim of each of the Shavotim gave to the Mishkan. Reuven, Shimon, Yehuda, all the Shavotim apart from Levi, as long as perek in the Chumash, all the Shvatim, apart from Levi, gave presents to the Beis HaMikdosh. And our parasha begins, to the Mishkan. And our parasha begins like this, Vaydaber Hashem u'Moshe l'imur, daber, speak, el Aaron, v'omar to'elov, and say to him. And one should note that our Masorah is that Dibur is Loshen Kosher, and Amira is not. So one of the questions we need to approach is why the Pasuk has the double and contradictory expressions, daber and v'omar to'. Daber el Aaron v'omar to'elov b'halo sechoes haneiros, when you make the flames go up, el mul pneiam neiro yo'iru shivas haneiros, make sure that the flames point towards the middle stem. And Chazal are concerned about the juxtaposition, what is it that the menorah has to do with Chanukas HaNasiim? And Rashi quotes the famous Medrash Tanchuma, which says this: Aaron was the leader of Shevet Levi. Shevet Levi have not made any contribution to the Mishkan. And when Aaron saw that all the other Shavotim have made a contribution and his Shevet haven't, Kol she'ozdato, he felt shvach, he felt weak, he was depressed. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to him, Chayecho, by your very life, shelecho gedola mishelohem, what you have is better than what they have, because you are meitivu madlikes haneiros, you clean the neiros, you light the neiros, that's better. And the Ramban asks, if HaKadosh Baruch Hu wishes to give Aaron a nechama, why choose the menorah? Why not choose any of the other avodas that Aaron does? He, after all, brings all the korbanos. For that matter, he brings the minchas chavitim of the Kohen Gadol every day. For that matter, uniquely, he goes lifnai v'lifnim into the Kodesh Kadoshim on Yom HaKippurim. The Arachayim points out this, that each of the Nasim of the Shavotim gave korbanos. Who do you suppose did the avod on those korbanos? Obviously, Aaron HaKohen. So the Nasi of Shevet Reuven brought something for the Mishkan on one day, and on that day Aaron did the avoda with those karbonos, and each of them. So Aaron, as a matter of fact, did avoda on every single day, the Chanukas HaNasiim, so what's going on? So I think that the poshut pshat in this medrash is what the Or HaChaim says, and when we've dealt with that, we will have a go at some of the drush in it. So the Or HaChaim says this. The Or HaChaim says, how exactly did Aaron deal with the menorah? And he says, that's a machloikus in the Gemara in Menachas Daf Peches. The first opinion in the Gemara in Menachas Daf Peches goes like this. As we all know, the menorah, with all its apples and pomegranate, whatever else it was made out of one lump of gold. But the neiros, says the first opinion of the menorah, the actual bits into which the oil and the wick were put were detachable. The neiros are separate from the menorah. So he took them out, and he cleaned them, and he wiped them with a sfog, which is a sponge, and he put in the oil, and he put in the wicks, and he put them back. That's the first opinion in the Gemara. The second opinion in the Gemara there, Menachas Daf Peches, is that though the neiros were part of the menorah, but the actual branches and stem were very thin and very slender and very flexible, and he would bend them down to clean them, put the stuff in, and bend them back up again. The Or HaChaim said if he'd been there, he would have persuaded the Amoraim that the first opinion is right. If he'd been there, he would have persuaded them that the neiros were separate from the menorah itself, not that they used to bend down the branches, but they used to take out the neiros. And he has for that a number of pieces of evidence. Let me just tell you two of them. One is the Pasuk in Parshas Bamidbar, which talks about how they used to cover up the various artifacts before they went travelling. It says they covered up the menorah, neirosel, malkochel, machtosel. They covered the menorah, they covered its neiros, they covered the tongs, they covered the shovels for getting rid of the ash and so on. Well, it looks as if the neiros there are separate from the menorah. For that matter, there's a pasuk in Divrei Hayomim which talks about the menoros in the Beis Hamikdash and Neirusehem, on which Rashi says explicitly that this excludes the opinion of those who think the Neirus were part of the menorah. Be this as it may, says the Or HaChaim, so what's going on? The Nechamah which HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave to Aaron was this. The other people, once in a whole lifetime, they made a contribution to the Mishkan. And you every day dismantle and reconstruct one of the artifacts of the Mishkan. Every day you take the menorah apart, you fix it, you put it together again. They did a Chanukah Mishkan once, and you reconstruct the menorah every day. And whether you learn, like the opinion with which the Or HaChaim agrees, that he took the Neiros out and he put them back in, or whether you learn, like the second opinion with which he disagrees, that they used to bend them down and bend them back up, either way, the Nechama for Aaron is, they only did it once, and you are reconstructing the Mishkan every day, and that's Daber v'omarto. Because he only said, HaKadosh Baruch Hu only said one thing, but it's got two messages. One is a dibur, there is a mitzvah. Every day you will do this, that dibur, loshen kosher. But also there's the nechama, that you are constructing the Mishkan every day, and that's v'omarto. You have daber, you have v'omarto. In the one statement, the one instruction to deal with the menorah, Aaron has both a mitzvah, which is loshen kosher, a dibur, and also an amira, a comfort, a nechama. Okay, so that I think is probably the poshut pshat in how that chazal works. Why should it be that menorah is more of a nechama than the avodah with the korbonos or the minchas chavitin or the keteris or the kodesh kodoshim or any? Because it's with the menorah that Aaron, on a daily basis, reconstructs an artifact of the Mishkan. All right. Now, the Rosh Yeshiva, Reb Chaim Shmulevitz, had a different pshat, which is based on a medrash, and the medrash is here as number 5 in these notes. The medrash says this, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave the mitzvah of menorah, Klal Yisrael asked him, you want us to make lights for you? You are the light of the world. You're the Ur HaOilom, you're the light of the world. How can we make light for you? So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I want to raise you in the eyes of the Ummus. I think that this medrash is understanding not when you make the lights go up, but when we make you go up. To make it technical for the Baalei Dukamanas, the Cho at the end of Baha'a Lo Secho is an objective pronoun, is a subjective pronominal suffix, when you make go up, and the medrash is understanding it not as a subject but as an object. When we make you go up, I wish to raise you in the eyes of the Ummus. Just like I've given light for you, I want everybody to see you giving light to me. You doing payback for me. And the Medrash says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave a moshel of a pikeach and a summa, a blind man and a sighted man, and they go on a journey. And as they get to town, the sighted man, who has been guiding the blind man all the way, says to him, when we get there, I'd like you please to light a light for me. Light a light for me as we go into the house. And the blind man says, do me a favor. All the way you've been lighting me and you want me to give a light to you. And he says, no, I want everybody to see that you have HaKoros HaTov, you do payback, just like I lit you, you light for me. Says the Medrash, the sighted man is HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the blind man is Klal Yisrael. HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, light for me a menorah. And Klal Yisrael said, you're the light of the world, you've been guiding us. Ba'amud Eish Loilo, Ba'amud Onon Yomon, Ba'amud Eish Loilo, you've lit us all the way. We should give light to you. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, yes. I wish to raise you in the eyes of the world. I want everyone to see that you do HaKoros HaTov, you do your best for a payback. And what the Rosh Yeshiva said, and this is the only bit in these notes which isn't either a posuk or a chazal, it's number 6, which is why I put it in italics, was that this avodah, what is unique about the avodah of the menorah, it's a HaKoros HaTov. It's Klal Yisrael showing we appreciate what you did for us, that you've lit us all the way. And that's why, to the extent that a human being can, we wish to do HaKoros HaTov, we wish to pay you back by lighting for you. And that HaKoros HaTov, said Reb Chaim, that HaKoros HaTov is unique to the menorah. That's not in the avodah of the korbanos, and not in the minchas chavidim, and not in going into the kodesh kodashim b'tnai v'difnim. The expression of HaKoros HaTov, only the menorah does that. So, the Nechama for Aaron, according to the way Reb Chaim understood the Medrash Rabbah in Parshas Baalei Secho, is that the menorah uniquely is an expression of Hakaras HaTov, and Hakaras HaTov is something extremely important. And that's what I plan to talk about for about the next 19 and a half minutes. So there is Hakaras HaTov, which is simple and straightforward. I'll give you an example. It's there in number 7. Everyone knows the story about how Rabbi Akiva's wife allowed him to go away and learn for years, and he came back. She said he can go and learn further. When he came back, it was the Gadol Hador. And she ran to him, and she fell before him, and the Talmidim tried to push away this ragged, unknown woman. What's she doing approaching the Gadol Hador? Surely we should have a mechitz or something, who knows? And he says, leave her in peace. Sheli v'shelochem shelohi. What I have, the learning I have, the learning that you have from me, it's all hers. Now that's a very straightforward and obvious Hakaras HaTov. It's Hakaras HaTov we understood. She wished to enable him to become a Talmud Chacham. She made this possible. He recognized that Sheba Kavona did this. He publicly gives expression. It's all straightforward, simple, sort of thing that even I can understand. However, one should be aware that Hakaras HaTov is actually, in the eyes of Chazal, much more than that. You remember that when the brothers wished to kill Yosef, Reuven saved him. As the Pasuk says, Vayishma Reuven, Reuven understood what was going on. Vayatzi Lehu Miodom, he saved Yosef from them, and he said, don't kill him. Why? Why did Reuven save him? What was special about the life and the history of Reuven that he felt it was his responsibility to step forward? So, people will remember that the great Aveira of the life of Reuven is whatever it was he did or didn't do with Bilhah. That's what he did. And Chazal point out that immediately after that event, the Psukim say that Yaakov had 12 sons. We see that Reuven had not been kicked out of his position. But there is a Chazal, and the Chazal, which is here in number 9, goes like this. Why is it that Reuven felt it was his responsibility to save Yosef? Omar Reuven, who mona siim achai ve'eni matzilo. That is to say, Yosef had a dream. In the dream, there are stars. How many stars are there? 11. 11 stars. So Reuven is still one of the Shvatim. If Reuven had been sacked, excluded, made Ois, son of Yaakov, because of what he did with Bilhah, the dream would have been 10 stars. And there aren't 10 stars, there are 11. Says Reuven, Yosef recognizes me as one of the Shvatim. I have to save him. Now, just a minute. Did Yosef mean to do him a favor? Did Yosef go to bed and say, I will have a dream, and I'll have a dream, and in the dream there'll be 11... No. No kavana whatsoever. Absolutely not. Not only that, the dream comes min hashamayim. It wasn't... Yosef had... It's not like Mrs. Rabbi Akiva, who be kavana did this for him, and he recognized... Yosef did not in any sense intend to do Reuven a favor by having 11 stars in a dream, did he? He wasn't even aware he'd done him a favor. Nevertheless, say Chazal, Reuven owed him Hakaras HaTov for the tova which he had done him, even though there was no intent. And that is why he saved her. And you know what, say Chazal, even though he saved him, he didn't actually do it at the level which he should have. There's a Yalkut which I've stuck here in number 10, which goes like this. Had Reuven known that as a result of what Yosef had done, there would be a posse which said, Vayishma'a Reuven, Vayatzileh, Miyodim, he wouldn't just have told them to put him in a pit. He'd have put him on his shoulders and carried him to his father back. We're supposed to have Hakaras HaTov, not just where it's open and obvious as it was with Rabbi Akiva to his wife. We're supposed to have Hakaras HaTov at an extraordinary and exalted level, even when somebody did us a tova with no intent and whatnot. Let me tell you a story, and I hope that this is not going to cause any trouble if anyone tells it to their wife. Yesterday, I had said Vatura in Sage, good fine, and I met there an ex-Talmud who'd been a Talmud of mine 30 years ago. Anyway, he came over to me, told me the following Maisa happened. He was involved with a business connected with Learman's Bank, whatever that is in New York, and there was a certain amount of trouble. And the lawyer came to the meeting, and the lawyer was an English gentleman whose name I won't mention. And the English gentleman said, where did you go to school? And this man said, Menorah Grammar School. Oh, said the fellow, did you know Rabbi Goldblatt? I was with him in Oxford. And from then on, the whole atmosphere of the meeting changed. Suddenly, completely positive. Now, I thought I'm dashing about Hakaras HaTov. I never intended to help this guy with a meeting with a lawyer 30 years later to do with it. But... There's some sort of Hakoras HaTayika. Whatever it is. Let's get back to where we are.
Is Hakoras HaTayika recognition, or is it a positive act of thanks?
I think it is neither. I think, and you may be right that it requires an action, or whatever, I think it's how you're supposed to feel towards the person to whom you, or creature, or animal, or whatever it might be, to whom you have to be makir tov. I think it's how you are supposed to feel. Now, whether that feeling leads then to what you say, or what you do, or whatever else, I can't tell you. But we're going to get to cases where the Torah needs to be interpreted in the prism of Hakaras HaTov. That is to say, the person in the Chumash should have known that HaKadosh Baruch Hu can't have meant that, because that contradicts Hakaras HaTov. That is to say, Torah needs to be understood in accordance with this, where people do the wrong thing because Hakaras HaTov has not occurred to them. I can't give you a straight answer. I haven't thought about it in that sort of category, and it's a perfectly fair question. But I think it's a feeling and an attitude that we're supposed to have, which should affect how we behave and how we think and how we understand. Does that make sense? Let's talk about it again in 12 and a half minutes, and we may by then be a little clearer. We never know our luck, but thank you. Okay, let's skip the next one. So let's go to number 14. You remember, it's one of the things I used to say when I was teaching primary school. What do we know about Moshe Rabbeinu? Every event that takes place before you get to the snare is Moshe taking care of somebody, right? He goes out to see what's happening with his brothers. He cares about everybody else. He finds an Egyptian bullying a Jew. He interferes. He cannot be a bystander. Next day, finds two Jews fighting. He interferes. When he runs away to Midian, he finds the shepherds bullying the shepherdesses. He interferes. Moshe is someone who constantly interferes when he sees somebody being persecuted. Anyway, so he came to the well in Midian. He saw the shepherds bullying the shepherdesses. He interfered and saved the shepherdesses and watered the flocks, so on and so forth. And they get home early because the shepherds didn't have the opportunity to delay them and so on. And their father Yisro asked them what's going on. And they said, Ish mitzri hitzelonu miyad horoim. An Egyptian man saved us from the shepherds. And Pshat HaPoshet, as we all know, is a man dressed as an Egyptian who spoke Egyptian and we thought was an Egyptian. But there's a medrash. The Midrash is here in number 15. The Midrash says this: once upon a time there was a man, and this man had his feet bitten by an arod. An arod is a wild donkey. What is the treatment for getting your feet bitten by an arod? Don't try ringing the GP, nechtigatog, you won't get through, and when you do, he'll only speak to you on the phone. The thing you do is you run to the nearest river and stick your feet in. So the man ran to the nearest river to stick his feet in and found a child drowning and saved it. So the child says, what a wonderful thing you've done. Had it not been for you, I would have drowned. And the man says, excuse me, I didn't save you, the donkey saved you. If the donkey hadn't bit me, I wouldn't have come to the river. And if I hadn't come to the river, I wouldn't have saved you. The arod saved you. So says Moshe Rabbeinu to the Benos Yisro, I didn't save you. The Egyptian who attacked the Jew, whom I then killed, which led to my having to run away from Mitzrayim, he's the one who saved you. Ish mitzri hitzilonu miyad horoim. We, the daughters of Yisro, have to be makir tov to the Egyptian who attacked the Jew, who was therefore killed by Hakaras HaTov to someone who had not the slightest intent. The donkey has no intent to save a child drowning in a river. The Egyptian beating up the Jew never heard of Yisro or his daughters or the well or any. But nevertheless, what is the attitude that this Medrash says we are supposed to have? The attitude that we're supposed to have is, if the daughters of Yisro have benefit from the fact that Moshe's there, and the reason why Moshe is there is because Paro wishes to kill Moshe, and the reason why Paro wishes to kill Moshe is because Moshe killed an Egyptian, and the reason why Moshe killed the Egyptian is because the Egyptian attacked the Jew, the sort of thing which Moshe, who can't be a bystander, what? Ish mitzri hitzilonu. See what I mean about attitude? If you are taking that Medrash as it's written, if you're not saying droshes in the Medrash, just seeing what it says, it's saying that our attitude has to be that we're grateful even for something as remote as that. Before we get tied up in that, let's move on. You remember that the two Malchei Ho'emori were threats to us, Og and Sichon. And the psukim about Og are different from the psukim about Sichon, because about Sichon, we're told nothing. But with reference to Og, we're told, and it's here in number 16, Vayom Rashem el Moshe al Tiroh, so don't be afraid of Og. Don't be afraid of Og. Why should you be afraid of Og? What has Og done? You should be afraid of him. There's no possibility about Sichon Altira also. So Rashi, if you remember, says Moshe was frightened because maybe the zechus of what Og did for Avrom will be helpful for Og. Maybe because of the fact there has to be a hakoras hatov to Og, Og will have zechus. What did Og do for Avrom? So if you remember, the pasuk says Vayovo ha-polit vayaged l'Avrom u'ivri, when Lot was captured. So the polit, the refugee, came, the man who escaped came and told Avrom that Lot has been captured. Who's the polit? So the Medrash which says it was Og. Okay, so we owe Og a toviva because Og told Avrom that Lot has been captured. Good, fine. Why did he do it? So Reb Chaim quoted a Tosfos in Nida, which is there in number 18. What was Og's motivation in doing this wonderful thing that Og came and told Avrom Avinu that his nephew Lot has been captured? Have a look at it. Og omar belibo, Og said in his mind, Eilich I'll go, v'omal Avrom, and I'll tell Avrom, v'ilochem, Avrom will pick a fight, yomos he'll die, esel sorisht, and I'll get his wife. So hang on just a minute. We're not here talking about a hakara satov like Rabbi Kiva and his wife, where she intended it and he recognized it. We're not even talking about hakara satov like Reuven and Yosef, where Yosef had no intent whatsoever. We're not even talking about something indirect. I mean, the Mitzri didn't know when he attacked the Jew that Moshe was going to kill him, and when Moshe killed him, he didn't know he'd have to run away. And when he ran away, what we're talking about is someone whose intent was purely malicious. His entire intent of Og was not to do Avrom a favor, but, Lahavdil, like Uriah Chiti, to arrange that he should be killed so that he, Og, could get his wife. And nevertheless, Al Tiro Oso. Chazal see here, at least the way Rashi is understanding it, that there is some sort of hakoras hatov which might give Og a zechus, which might mean that by contrast with Sichem, where everything is going to be fine, we may have a problem here. Al Tiro also, Moshe's frightened. I mentioned that the way Reb Chaim Shmulevitz understood it, hakoras hatov is a prism through which Torah needs to be understood. You remember that in a week or two's time, we're going to have the instructions to take retribution from Midian. Whenever you look at Pasuk 19, at Numbers 19 and 20, Hashem says to Moshe, Nekom nikmas b'nei Yisrael me'is ha-Midianim, take retribution from Midian. So what does Moshe do? So, there in number 20, Vayishlachos on Moshe be delegated. Excuse me, what gives him the right to delegate? Kodesh Baruch Hu told him to take retribution, and he didn't. He sent Pinchas and the army, and he stayed at home. No doubt he davened and said tilim. But why did he not do what he was told? So if you have a look at number 21, HaKodesh Baruch Hu Omar LeMoshe Nekom Ba'atzmach, HaKodesh Baruch Hu told him, take retribution yourself, U'sholach L'Achirim, Ella al Yedei Shenizgadol b'Midian. Moshe had spent years growing up in Midian. He said, it cannot be that I should harm people who did me a tova. HaKadosh Baruch Hu can't have meant that. He cannot have meant that I personally should go and kill Midianim. That can't be. That would be a negation of the HaKoras HaTov which I owe them. He must have meant that I delegate this. He can't have meant anything else. And there's a comparable case, which people will, I'm sure, be aware of, because it's Chumash Rashi. You remember that the first three makas, Dam, Tzvadeya, Kinim, the only interesting thing I know about the makas, by the way, is you know that when you're counting a minyan, the minig is Hoshia Samecha. I have a somewhat malicious friend who goes, Dam, Tzvadeya, Kinim. Anyway, going back to Torah. The first three makas are performed not by Moshe, but by Aaron. Why? So the famous Chazal, Dam is an attack on the river. Moshe, who had been in the Teva, in the river, cannot harm the river. Tzvadeya is an attack on the river. Kinim is done by taking the chol, taking the dust of the earth, and the dust was used by Moshe to cover up the Egyptians. Excuse me, these are inanimate objects. Does the river know or care who turned it into blood? Does the river know or care who caused the infestation or frogs? Does the dust know or care who it was that... No, it doesn't. But nevertheless, Hakaras HaTov, the requirement is that Moshe Rabbeinu should not in any way seem to be harming something to which he owes Tova. That's why I posit that it's, apart from anything else, it's attitudinal. You may be right that there are things in there about how we behave and what we do and all of that, but what the Torah is seeking to do in these Midrashim of Chazal is constrain the way we think. The way we think about the dust, the way we think about the river, the way we think about the Mitzri who killed the Jew, who attacked the Jew. Right. Okay, let's move on. So, if you remember the story of Mei Meriva, there are a variety of different understandings as to what exactly it was that Moshe did wrong. Rashi's understanding is that Moshe was supposed to speak to the rock, and he didn't. He hit it. The Ramban asks against that, that if he was only supposed to speak to the rock, why is he told to take his stick with? Interestingly, the Ramban in the Mora learns that what is wrong is that Moshe lost his temper. You remember Shimu no ha-morim, listen you morim. You remember the pshatim in Rashi on morim, I presume? Morim. So, one pshat is rebels, like Ben Soru Mera. And one pshat is people who try to teach their teachers, like Mora. And the third one, says Rashi, is Loshen Yevoni Shota. It's the Greek word moron. But in order to know that morim is the Greek word moron, you need to know a little bit of Greek. I remember the week I became a chosna, my wife took me to some family of hers in Mattersdorf, in the heart of the Black Country, and one of them asked me what the point is in learning Greek, on which I had spent several years, and it was Parshas Chukas, so I told him that Rashi and said, without knowing Greek, you wouldn't understand it. And whether you think it's worth spending years learning Greek in order to understand one line in Chumash Rashi depends on how important you think Rashi is. Poor kid, even then I was a bully. Anyway, so the Pasuk says that Moshe did something wrong at...
It wasn't Greek.
Sorry?
It was too early for Greek, surely.
That is a separate discussion. The discussion about foreign language in Chumash is the Machlokes Rashi and the Ramban. Because if you remember, Rashi a few times quotes Latin, and a few times quotes Greek, and a few times quotes Arabic. I'll tell you one of the Greek ones. So, Vayikro lo alon bochus. So, he called the alone under which they buried Devorah Menikis Rivka, alon bochus. And Rashi quotes the Chazal, which says weeping for somebody else, because alon is the Greek word for other, which it is. It's a whole series of words in English, allotrophy or whatever it might be, where alon means other. So Rashi quotes Greek. Rashi also quotes Arabic. I'm going to overrun, forgive me. You remember, al tochru mimenu no, uvoshel mevushol ba moyim. You may not eat it no, and on no, Rashi says no is the Arabic for raw. Let's come to Latin. You remember that they called him Av Reich. So the Targum says, Av Reich, Dein Abo de Malka, the Av of the Reich. Because Reich is a word for king. And the Rashi in the standard text says Loshen Arami, which is almost certainly a mistake, it's Loshen Romi. Because those of us who are old enough and beards are white enough to have done Latin at school will know that Rex Regis is the Latin for a king. Reicho, Regis, okay? So Rashi, in a variety of places, frequently it's from Medrash Tanchum, I don't know if he knew any Greek. Interestingly, the Rashbam on the Aseres Hadibrutz quotes the Latin translation of St. Jerome, the Vulgate, in order to say that he doesn't agree with his Taitzin Lo Sirzach. So he must have had some sort of access to the Latin. Be this as it may, there's a Ramban who thinks that one should not be quoting that sort, that the suggestion of languages being cognate is a bit obscure. Meantime, you certainly know the Gemara in the first Perek Sanhedrin about Totafos, Tot, Bekaspi, Fot, Beafriki. It's the tutu, not the silly dress. That Totafos means a tutu. Tot is two in one. So it's clear that in the minds of Chazal, foreign language can be an indication of meaning. And you do get quite interesting things like Akrav, which is a scorpion. Can you see that the consonants are the same? C, R, P, Kuf, Resh, Base. Anyway, leave all that and get back to Chazal. So, I've stolen 5 minutes, which I apologize. So, what was it that Moshe did wrong at Mei Meriva? So, Reb Chaim has the most extraordinary Yalkut, which is Lera number 27. The Yalkut goes like this. Yeah, so Moshe Rabbeinu is told to go there and deal with the rock and told to take his stick. He should have known he mustn't hit it. Why should he have known he shouldn't hit it? Because, says the Yalkut, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to him, Ma osa sela levonai? Have you forgotten what the sela did? Vayeni kehu dvash misela. The Pasuk says that the sela gave forth honey for my children. It's not possible that I should instruct you to hit something which gave honey to my children. Said Reb Chaim, it's another case, isn't it? Like Nekom Nikmas B'nei Yisrael, take retribution from the Midyonim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu can't have meant that you should do that yourself, because of Akoras HaTov. HaKadosh Baruch Hu cannot have meant that you should strike the rock, because the rock gave honey to my, whatever it might be. One more, and then I really will, at least for the meantime, stop. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu at the snare told Moshe Rabbeinu to go back to Mitzrayim and get B'nei Yisrael out, and what did he do? He went to Yisro to ask permission. What do you mean, go to Yisro? HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Melech, Malchei HaMelechim, says, go to Mitzrayim. What do? You get up and you go. So, says the Medrash Tanchuma, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to Moshe, I will send you to Paro, Moshe said, I can't. HaKoros HaTov to Yisro. I have to ask his permission. HaKoros HaTov is supposed to dictate how we think, how we behave, and how we understand Torah. Because Torah must, at least in the instances we've looked at, be understood in terms of HaKoros HaTov. And what led us into this? The fact that the Yalkut says that the menorah is an expression of our HaKoros HaTov to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Ad kan. Never, I'll do it.